The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Welcome to the start of a new week on Football Social Daily. Not that weekends make much difference to us here at Sports Social HQ, because we're bringing you this podcast chock full of Premier League news and action every single day of the Premier League season. A full review of the weekend's action is available now on the podcast feed. You can check out Fergal & Co's take on the wins, draws and losses from across the Premier League weekend on yesterday's podcast. That includes a first win for Ralph Rangnick as the brand new Manchester United interim boss. But just as things are going right on the pitch for Manchester United, suddenly there are problems off it, with some revealing quotes in the papers courtesy of Zlatan Ibrahimovic about his time at Manchester United in his new autobiography. Exactly what the Swede has been saying will be revealed shortly, and the impact it might have discussed as well. Speaking of trouble, Everton are arguably the Premier League's crisis club right now. They're in action tonight against Mikel Arteta's spluttering, inconsistent Arsenal. We're going to look ahead to tonight's game and decide if Everton can turn around their eight-game run without a win. To talk about all that, I've got Joel Tudor over there. How you doing, Joel?
Good morning, guys.
You got a cold, mate?
No, I'm very cold.
Sounded very bunged up there. Marley over there as well. Was that a timely sniff from you, Marley?
That was me. That was Joel again.
Oh, no. So you said
he's not going to cold, then he just went...
snotting all over the place. How are you, Marley?
Yeah, not too bad. Buzzing after the first win of the weekend, first win of the season at the weekend. So happy days. Bring it on. Hopefully we're going to go into Jamal Lewis's prime performance at left back for the next hour.
Maybe. I think it's pretty rare. I think it's the first time this season that the three of us have sat in a studio, a Manchester United fan, a Newcastle fan and a West Ham fan.
All happy.
And we've all celebrated wins from across the weekend.
Well, it's the one time this season my team's actually won a game. So
yeah. It's fair enough. We are going to go into probably some of those games shortly, but not in too much detail. Like I say, yesterday's podcast is where to head if you want a full breakdown of the weekend's results. But today we are going to start off with a game of heroes and villains, as we like to do on a Monday. Your nominations for the good and the bad from the weekend's football. Would either of you like to volunteer to go first? We'll start with heroes, I think.
I'll let Newcastle boy Marley go first.
It could have been any one of 11, if I'm honest, at the weekend. I just thought it's hard to praise one man in particular. Obviously, Wilson got the goal and stuff for Newcastle, but as I mentioned, Jamal Lewis, I think, since Eddie Howe's came in, I mentioned Joe Linton last week and the sort of man management to just get the best out of him and, you know, ignite a player and say, right, look, what do you want to do? Where do you want to play? Okay, I'll play you here. I want you to do this, 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 and this. And it's amazing what you get out of players. And I think they're seeing the same with Jamal Lewis, because under Steve Bruce, I think we signed him for about 12 million quid from Norwich. Mm. And he was like, he got in the team and then he was like the scapegoat when things started going wrong. And he wasn't playing that badly, I don't think. But then I think once he got dropped and then he got put back in the team, he was starting to play poorly, but that's because he's a young player. He needs confidence, like, more than anything. And he had one of the most experienced managers under Steve Bruce, like, that he's ever going to work under. And Bruce just didn't manage him properly, and then just basically let him sit on the bench for well over a season. And Eddie Howe came back in and said, "Well, you're the only natural left back we've got at the club. So yes, you're going to play left back in this back four system as you have done when you were at Norwich, and all through your career so far." And he's turning in proper performances now. I think he's energetic, combative. He won't let you pass him easy. If you beat him, he'll spin and run after you and try and get the ball back. It's just simple stuff, like. But it's just all through that team now is just people that try. And no one was asked when Steve Bruce was around, because they were thinking, "Oh well, we've lost again, and back five hasn't worked. We're trying to give it to Alan and Maximan and hoping he can." Dribble past seven players and stick it in the net. So
interestingly, I had a conversation with someone last week who had a bit of an inside scoop on life at Newcastle United now compared to what it was like under Steve Bruce. And he said it's as simple as players now know what they're doing when they don't have the ball.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it makes if you're a striker, if you're a forward player, if you're a flair player, I guess it's not as important. So Alisson Maximum is going to look impressive in any team he plays for, no matter what he's being told to do, because he has the ability to surprise and take people on and kind of make his own thing happen. If you're a defender in a team like that, it becomes hugely difficult. If the players around you don't know what they're doing, if you as a defensive line don't have shape, you don't know where you're going at any particular moment, particularly when you've got the ball, that becomes really difficult. So I guess players like Jamal Lewis, who do have ability, mm-hmm. are going to shine under a manager like Eddie Howe just by the virtue of him telling them what to do.
Yeah, well, you could see that with when you go back and look at the side under Bruce compared to Benitez. I mean, Benitez had this largely the same team as Bruce had, but he made them the sixth best defence in the league. So outside the top six, we were the best defence in the league. That's because they were drilled. It was a back five, but the back five knew how to play, knew when to step up, knew when to drop in. And with Bruce, it was like, well, I'm putting five defenders on and you should sort it out yourselves, you know, because there's five here. So, you know, there's more than their two strikers or their three strikers. You know, it was just kind of, he just put them there and went, yeah, go on, defend. And but like every other manager was like, well, you know, when their winger goes on the outside, you drop in here so he can't come back inside. And it's just the little tactics you can see. But you watch 90 minutes of football from Newcastle under the two different managers, it's just worlds apart. And that's why there's more hope around the club now, even though we've still got a big task to stay up.
So Newcastle United as a whole, but specifically Jamal Lewis getting your hero of the weekend after a 1-0 win over Burnley. How those standards have dropped.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Joel, who are you nominating for your hero?
I was going to go with Bernardo Silva just because he's just annoyingly good, isn't he? He's really annoyingly good, especially because he plays for a rival as well. I get the same feeling from him that I got from David Silva, which is, like, even though he plays for City, he's just one of those players where you just have to tip your hat to and just say why you're actually a very amazing player for your side. But the difference with him this season, I think he's probably the second best player in the league so far, just behind Salah. And obviously that's a pretty good achievement because Salah's probably the best player in the world right now. So it just shows the level that Silva's actually playing at. But what I've noticed with Silva is he's coming up with goals that are actually meaningful. They're not just kind of like 3-0 stat padding goals. He's actually winning them games now, which has probably been a big difference to maybe how he was in the past. I mean, I think he got goals against Leicester when they won 1-0 away to them, and then he got a goal against United at Old Trafford, then against Villa just recently. He's coming up with big ones, and he's got, I think, 7 goals in the league this year. Yeah. He's well on his way to probably his best tally in a City shirt. And I didn't expect it because at the start of the season, there was a lot of talk of him potentially wanting to leave. And I think even still, he still wants to leave, judging by Guardiola's comments on him this morning, where he said that obviously City don't want him to leave, but he's a curious guy. So it sounds to me as if this probably will be his final season, judging by the comments people are making around him. But I mean, it just shows how good of a professional he is because he's literally having his best season of his career so far.
He's already broken his scoring record.
Oh, he already has.
For Manchester City. Yeah, he's never scored more than a season. But is he one of those players that he still seems to me, Bernardo Silva, that he's slightly underrated in the Premier League? Mm. People don't really appreciate how good he is. And I wonder whether that's due to the fact that he plays in a team with Phil Foden and Kevin De Bruyne and Jack Grealish. It's very difficult to kind of shine in that environment. But here he is in a season where Manchester City maybe aren't quite as strong as they have been in previous seasons. He is the ticking metronome. He is the person who is getting those results for Manchester City.
It's funny as well because you would have thought in the summer that Jack Grealish would have been the guy.
Yeah.
Especially after paying $100 million for him. But it makes City look a little bit stupid because they already had the guy who pretty much does everything Grealish does and more. Bernardo Silva's 10 times the player Jack Grealish is. You can't. Every single area of his game is better, especially in terms of his pressing. His off-the-ball work is ridiculous. I remember at Old Trafford, he was like the only guy who just... He's like Tevez, you know, the way he just kind of runs and runs, and then he's like the Guardiola player of the full package, where he knows his role so well. He knows how to press so well, and he just doesn't tire at all. I think you're right, where he doesn't get his plaudits just because he's in a bit of a superstar team. And obviously, compared to Salah, where he gets, you know, goal after goal after goal, but doesn't really get involved in the game too much, you would think it'd be the opposite, where Silva, with how nice he looks on the ball, it's very aesthetic, He sometimes reminds me, not in terms of quality, in terms of Messi, but the way he's got such like a like his agility to be able to glide past players like Hazard did. He's really easy on the eye to watch, but just because City have got so many amazing players like De Bruyne, who steals the limelight with like a crazy Beckham style cross every other game, and then you've got Jesus will probably come up with a winner. He's just the guy who does the dirty work, but he always comes up with the clutch goals as well. And I think that's why he goes under the radar, but now he's winning games for them, and that's why he deserves to be alongside Salah in terms of how good he is, because he's been easily one of the best in the league.
Definition of a box-to-box midfielder, Bernardo Silva.
Box-to-box, side-to-side. I reckon he could do a job at left-back.
Yeah, probably.
Honestly.
He gets a mention in a minute as my villain, actually. He's not my villain, but he's involved in the story around who my villain of the weekend
Tell
is.
Me
but
more.
We'll get onto that shortly. I want to nominate my hero, though, which is Artur Masuaku.
I was such a shock as a West Ham player.
He's one of my favourite...
Is it for his insane cross?
Yeah, well...
like Papi Cissé.
He's one of my favourite West Ham players.
Whoa, Cissé meant that. Oh, no, we're not having that.
I love Artur Masuaku. I think he's a real character. I think he's not a left back by any stretch of the imagination. And if he is, he's the only left back in the league who can't put in a tackle. He's he's been played at left back throughout his career and a little bit wasted. But I think we saw the best of him coming on at the weekend when he scored the winner against Chelsea. And you only have to look at his Twitter bio to know the kind of character that Artur Masuaku is. His bio is baller for West Ham and DR Congo, hashtag King Arthur, which I think is absolutely brilliant.
The celebration matched it.
So he scored the winner against Chelsea at the weekend. In added time, it was a perfectly placed inside of the foot.
Could say that.
Shot to the top corner. He spotted Mendy off his line. I mean, there's some debate potentially whether it was a cross or a shot, because it was speculative if it was a cross. But I like the fact that Artur Masuaku put this to bed. So on social media he posted, so was it a cross or a shot? ? Hint, I was surprised as you. Hashtag London Derby. And I like that. I like the fact that players quite often style it out, don't they? When they score a cross that goes in, they go, oh, I meant it, it was a shot. But I like the fact he's nailed his colours to the mast and gone, do you know what? Complete fluke, but won us the game. Fair play, Arta. So that is my hero. Moving on to my villain, as I promised, it does involve Bernardo Silva, because my villain of the weekend is Guy Mowbray, commentating on Match of the Day on the Watford versus Manchester City game. I don't know if either of you heard this, when Bernardo Silva scored his second.
No.
So it was off a save, so the Watford keeper Backman made a great save, went to Bernardo Silva and he popped it in for the second goal. As he made the save, the commentary from Guy Mowbray was, Backman turns on overdrive, you ain't seen nothing yet. Now Joel's looking confused because Joel's far too young to know the band, the Canadian rock band, Backman Turner Overdrive.
It's like an 80s inside joke.
There's a band.
I was going to say, are you saying I'm old enough to remember it? Because I don't either.
You don't know Backman Turner? Oh.
No.
Right, so Backman Turner Overdrive are an 80s rock band from Canada.
I was born in 91.
Why does everyone think you're like your 40s?
And their big song. Well, this is part of my point to why he's a villain. So part of what their big song was, You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet, right. Okay? And so he'd squeezed that into his commentary. But it didn't work on two levels. A, it was just a save from a goalkeeper. It's like, if you're turning on overdrive, you're sprinting somewhere, right? So yeah, it doesn't right. really work from that context. You ain't seen nothing yet, then he concedes the goal anyway, which is rubbish. And the fact that football fans in general won't remember who Backman Turner Overdrive are, which you two have just proved. Which is why Guy Mowbray gets my villain award for his cheesy football commentary from the weekend. Marley, who's your villain?
My villain is, as long-time listeners will know, it's always something trivial and small that winds me up. And someone who's
or
trivial...
Or Steve Bruce.
And someone who's trivial and small is Neil Maupay. And he gets it again. Just because I just don't like him. He just seems like an absolute like, you know, like just one of them players that just annoys you because everything about him is just housery. Like, it's just, I like, you know, again, long term listeners will know that everybody loves a bit of housery these days, like now and again. It's nice to see, but he scores a goal in the last minute and he goes and shushes the crowd. It's like, I just want him to get leathered with a bottle at some point. Like, someone just go, bottle of water, straight in the face, and he'll drop like a sack of spuds and start crying on the floor like a footballer. But he just gets on my nerves because he celebrates every goal like he's won the World Cup. And it's like, you've scored an equaliser against Southampton to make sure Brighton have gone now 11 games without winning. Like, have some, like, sense of where you are in your career. Like, you're probably Brighton's 8th best player or something. And you're celebrating like this. It's just winds me up. Every time I see his little face, I'm just like, oh, you're in knob you. Like, I'd get an instant booking if I was playing against him because I'd just let him run away from me, then I'd just clip his ankles, be like, right, fine, I feel better for it. I'll take the yellow card. But yeah, Morpé, don't like him.
So, Marley using this feature as to a way to air personal grievances and vendettas, which is fine. Joel, wrap it up. Who's
I'm
your
team
villain?
Guendouzi on him.
You'll never guess what my villain's Morpé, but for the opposite reason.
Ah, well,
oh, okay.
Now, I swear to God, I think for me, you need these kind of players in football. It reminds me of like Jamie Vardy type, where they're such characters. But, you know, if you score a last-minute winner at a wayside, I'd do the exact same thing.
He didn't score a winner. It's a bloody equaliser.
Yeah, but it's Brighton, isn't it? They're not expecting more. Yeah, but, I mean, he scored, like, last-minute winners against, what is it, Palace when he did that dink. That was a nice goal.
Yeah.
Then he did the one against West Ham as well.
Yeah. Which, again, they did celebrate like they'd won the World Cup. Yeah, you had Graham Potter going over to the fans at the end and giving it all that with his arms.
Yeah, any last minute goal, if it keeps you in the game, is always a nice thing. But I think for me, you always need these kind of players to kind of rile up the crowds because players have gone too soft nowadays where if they score an equaliser or a last minute winner, they kind of, you know, they don't want to go over to the away fans because they might get a bit of abuse and that kind of thing. Whereas Mope, he's ready to jump in the crowd and start going for it. I think you need these kind of players. I remember when he had the argument with Guendouzi, which ended up making Arsenal sell Guendouzi. And I think Mope got a lot of backlash from his own club for that as well. I don't know if it was to do with like some arrogance. And you know what? I can tell. You can tell he's the type of guy where he's got a huge ego. He really doesn't give a crap what the kind of fans think of him. He's there to rile everyone up. And if he's a player of your club, you love him. If he's a player who scores against you, you want to run on the pitch like Adebayor against Arsenal. That's the way I see it. It's a very fine line. It's a love-hate line. But for me, he's a villain, but in a good way. Because I think you need those villains in football.
Like I kind of get what you're saying.
It's a panto type. You need the drama. I love it. I live for it.
So there's our heroes and villains from across the weekend. If you want to get involved in the conversation, do so. Let the boys know whether you agree with their Neil Maupay slating and hating. You can get it at The Sports Social. That's a good name for a feature, that slating and hating. Keep an eye out for that in future podcasts. We're going to talk about Everton versus Arsenal very, very shortly. But before I do that, have either of you boys ever been in a situation where you had to organise your team's five-a-side football?
Yeah.
You know, where you have
too many times.
You have to book it, you have to get the players, you have to count numbers, collect money and all that kind of thing. Pain in the arse, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Massively.
Complete pain in the arse. There is a new app that takes the effort out of organising five-a-side football or any sporting event for that matter. It's called Spond, and it removes all the hurdles and all the issues so people can spend more time on the game itself rather than the organising. And the best thing out of all is it's completely free. You set up the event, you send it to your mates, and then Spond does the rest. It sends schedules, it adds the games to your diaries, and it does the important bit as well for me, getting the cash off people after the game or even before the game, because I remember organising a five-a-side game for about a year and I worked out how much money I lost from people not paying across a year, and it was about 300 quid from a year of football. So there's
Jim,
no
that's
more...
that's a you problem.
You need better friends, mate. Yeah.
There's no more Big Dave kind of going to his car, scrabbling around in his ashtray, looking for that quid that he keeps for the trolleys in Tesco, because it's all done. It's all automated in advance. It means there's less admin and more getting stuck into the game, and it saves, on average, the organiser of the football games or whatever sport it is, 2.5 hours a week of organisation just from having this app. There's a million users already, so you can check out what the fuss is about for free and join the coaches, volunteers, teams, clubs and players who are using the app already. Spond.com is the place to find more information, or you can search for the app in the Apple App Store or in Google Play. Get it installed on your phone and give it a go for free. Spond.com if you fancy giving that a go. Right, we're going to get stuck into Everton versus Arsenal next on Football Social Daily.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily. Everton versus Arsenal is the last game of the weekend's action. Monday night football and two clubs who have both in the last month conceded four goals to Liverpool. So at least they've got that in common. Now, the big news, I guess, comes from the Everton camp ahead of this game because it's been announced that Marcel Brands is set to leave Everton. Whilst that doesn't really change things on the pitch, Marley, straight away, I guess it does show that the club are panicking a little bit as to what's going on, because Everton are a club that are arguably in crisis at the moment.
Yeah, something needed to change, didn't it? And I think with the amount of managers Everton have been through in the last 5 or 6 years, or, well, since Moyes, it's not a surprise to see sporting director go. His record in the market isn't amazing, you know. 30 million quid on Iwobi stands out like a sore thumb. Moyes Keane, Jean-Philippe Bamin, £25 million each. You know, when these players don't step up and do it for you, you know, you've got to look at the guy who signed them, and it was him. And there's even rumours of people above him having, like, saying, I want Iwobi, for example. Mm. And if that's the case, then your position's untenable anyway, because if you're in a position to make decisions and someone's making those decisions for you, you know, you're fighting a losing battle straight away. So he's had a go. Everton have got big budget, everyone knows that. But Moshiri above him is the one who makes the decisions, and sporting directors are literally, you know, my football managers are judged on results and sporting directors are judged on the business they do, and it hasn't been good enough so far. So I think the best thing Everton have done in the past few years, other than sign Richarlison, is bring through Calvert-Lewin into a top player. So that kind of sums up where Everton are. And I think rather than sack Benitez and go in another new direction and pay another guy a compensation package, which will be massive, it's time to do something different, see who else you can bring in that might work a little bit better with Rafa, and get the best out of that squad.
It doesn't feel like it's going to have a massive impact on the game that's coming up, maybe on the future of the football club, but you're right, it feels like one of those instances where they've gone, well, what can we do? Can't sack the players. We don't want to sack the manager. We feel like we need to do something because we're heading in the wrong direction. So I don't know what kind of impact it's going to have. He spent £300 million since he came into the club, Joel. Some of that on Alex Iwobi, £35 million, I think Alex Iwobi cost, or something. It might have been 27 actually. But as Marley hinted at there, that wasn't necessarily his choice. It was the choice of the owner to sign Iwobi. That's the rumour that's doing the rounds at the moment. That makes the job of a director of football or a sporting director really difficult, doesn't it? If the man above you is making those calls, you're being undermined constantly. So was he on to a losing battle from day one?
I don't know how much truth is in that, because then what's his job? Like, if the, obviously I'm sure every owner at every club has to sign off transfers, but I'm sure it's his job to seek out what the best recruitment is. Mm. And I don't think he's like the one who was the easy target. I'm pretty sure he had a big say in a lot of that, because when he was at PSV previously in the Dutch league, he was the one who had pretty good track record with them. So I don't buy into the fact that it's all on the owner. I'm sure the owner's been looking at the balance sheet and looking at all of these duds that they're signing, looking at the league table and thinking, I put in a £300 million investment and we're flirting with relegation. Mm-hmm. It makes zero sense. And I think on a podcast we did a week ago, Marcel Brands was my villain. And it was bluntly obvious. When you look at Rafa Benitez, when you look at his track record, he gets teams playing at the very minimum and makes them pretty defensively solid. At Everton, there's none of that whatsoever. And you can only do so much with the quality that you've got. And they're overpaid massively throughout these years. It's not even under Marcel Brands. It was under Steve Walsh as well, who went just before him, where he was buying the likes of Schneiderlin and Bolasie for 30-odd million each. It seems like Everton have just lost their way completely as to what club they actually are. Even in terms of when you look at the kind of players that they're signing, when you look at the ones who've actually been a success for them, it's been the ones who are the cheaper ones, who give their all for the club, like the likes of Damari Gray, Townsend, Fabian Delph. They're all guys who just play for the shirt. They don't cost a lot and they're going to give you at least like 6-7 out of 10s every week. The strategy that they went with in terms of signing all these like Barcelona outcasts and players who were totally finished at the clubs, but it was totally clear, like Schneiderlin and Iwobi. What are the all of us could have said before they signed those players, you're wasting your money.
I guess it's a similar situation to Newcastle are in, though, isn't it, at the moment, where they want to reach the next level. And the way they're, I mean, it's the tactic you use to get to that level. Clearly, the tactic they've used is these players have played at a higher level, so they're an upgrade on what we've got, even if they haven't necessarily shone at an Arsenal or a Barcelona or whoever it is.
Yeah, but it doesn't guide.
There's always that thing in there as well, like when someone's been at the top level, like let's take Yerry Mina, for example. Like, might be a good defender, yeah, but I always think when somebody's left an elite club and they've took a step down, what is their motivation to get back? Like, because that's like a huge thing. Like, if they've already been at the top and failed, so are they going to come back down to Everton and really play to get back there again? I always think, like, they've peaked, and sometimes they know they've peaked. And how many players do you ever see who take a step down and then play so well that they get another move back? Mm. It's not that many.
Does it mean that they're top
been
level?
Pretty good, but, like,
he's an anomaly, isn't he?
Lucas Dean and Richarlison are the only two signings that Brand's made that you'd say had been a success.
And then you've got about 10 others who have just gone down the drain. They probably won't be able to get
22 others, actually.
That's even worse then. I mean, you probably wouldn't get 10% return of what he paid for some of those guys.
That's what I mean.
Judging on what Marley said as well, are they really top-level players then? If they've been sold, because they didn't, they played at the top level, but they didn't succeed at the top level. So they're not necessarily top level players. You could sell anyone. Like, Barcelona have had a load of duds that they've had to flog off. It doesn't mean just because you've been signed by that club, it automatically means that now you're an elite player. You still got to prove yourself. And that's why all these players find themselves at like Everton, and like you get teams such as, I don't know, maybe not Leicester, but you know, on that kind of level, who take a chance thinking, oh, because he's been at Barcelona, it must mean that he has the capability to go to that level when he never was at that level to start with.
It's something that historically West Ham have always fallen into the trap of. And they've changed that cycle slightly, and that's led to the success they've got.
Yeah, I mean, you remember years and years ago, probably not so much now, but only between 3 and 10 years ago, like whenever anybody left Man United, they either went to West Ham or to Everton.
Yeah.
It was like Darren Gibson. Like,
and there's a reason.
Who's going to have him? Yeah. Everton going to have him. Like, it's just, it happens all the time. And Sunderland, when they were in the Premier League, it was there as well. Darren Gibson went there. John O'Shea went there. Wes Brown went there. It's just like, they were that level of like, yeah, we'll have you because you've been at Man United. Mm. Well, 60 grand a week. Yeah, fine, we'll pay that. And then they turn out to play like they're just, their career's over. Like, it's bizarre.
Let's move on to tonight's game and the big problem for Everton remains the absence of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He's still injured, still out of the game. And Solomon Rondon, the man who's been replacing him of late, he may or may not play. He's waiting for a scan on a hamstring to decide whether he's fit or not. But it's not really worked for Rondon at Everton. And this is a man you've bigged up on many occasions, Marley. You were disappointed he left Newcastle. Mm-hmm. Why hasn't it worked for him? Why is he proving ineffectual to lead the line for Everton?
I honestly think it's just his little spell in China, which I think he was there for about 2 years, 2.5 years. And that step down and then the step back up again when you're 2 years older than you were, I just think that's a huge thing, because like for Newcastle, he was amazing. Like, he was target man. He would fight with centre-backs. He would bring players into play. He had the support around him from players like Jose Perez and Kennedy, actually, remember? Random blast in the past. I don't know where he is now, Kennedy. But we had some decent sort of options around him, and we played to his strengths massively. Not sure Everton are doing as much, but even if they are, I just think that step down has took everything that he had. He arrived on a free, bit of a free hit type of thing, and it hasn't quite worked yet. And he's sort of left leading the line in Calvert-Lewin's absence, but I think even a couple of games recently, they've played Richarlison as a main striker and dropped Rondon, which sort of proves what people are thinking. Like, he has dropped off a little bit, and it's a shame really, because he should have joined Newcastle permanently. I think everybody wanted it except Mike Ashley at the time. Benitez wanted it, Rondon himself wanted it, and Ashley went and splooged 40 million on Joe Linton instead, which, you know, it's taken another manager to come in and actually get a tune out of him, which is strange. But
Yeah, Rondon, I just think the move to China has sort of robbed him of his prime time to go and be a decent player for a bigger team.
What about Arsenal then, Joel? Because we've seemed to say the same thing about them every few weeks, is they start to do well and then they lose a few games and they kind of lose a bit of confidence and it's two step forwards, three steps backs or whatever. They've lost in recent weeks, Manchester United, and they shipped four to Liverpool. Well, that was on their last trip to Merseyside, so they won't want to repeat that against Everton. Do you think this is just an indication of where Arsenal are? That they're just not good enough to beat the big teams anymore? They've kind of found their place and it is 7th, 8th, 9th. So they're going to lose to Manchester United. They're going to lose to Liverpool. It's not necessarily that Mikel Arteta has taken a step back in the development of that team. It's just they've come up against a better team.
Arsenal, I said it ages ago at the start of the season when everyone was hyping him because he got all these victories against like Brighton and that kind of... They're always the bridesmaid and never the bride. And they've been that way for the last 10 years. Every single game that they've come up against the big side, they've got demolished. Like, they got smashed by, I think it was Chelsea 2-0, and Chelsea absolutely dominated them at the start of the season. They got killed by City. They got killed by Liverpool. We were the better side against them, and we're in an absolute mess at the moment. Well, not at the moment, but at the time we played them. And for me, it's a case of they're just not at that level. It's the fact that the results have kind of lied to everyone in terms of where they actually are. They're good enough to beat these smaller sides. You know, they beat Watford and they beat Leeds, and that's fine. They probably will overcome those types of teams. When they come up against the sides who have actually got some quality about them, they get absolutely undone. And they've not got any injury problems to hide behind anymore now. At the start of the season, you know, they had like Partey out and they had the majority of the defence out. Now they've got a fully fit side ready to go. And it just kind of indicates that they're just not at the level yet. That I don't think they're going to get to that level either. I don't understand what people see in that side, if I'm honest, against probably what
youth.
A lot of people think.
Youth and enthusiasm.
It is, but youth doesn't always guarantee that they're going to end up having huge potential. I know Edu, their sporting director, said, you know, we're building a very young side. The potential's there. I don't care if you sign a 16, 17-year-old and put him in the side. It doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be the next Cesc Fabregas in your midfield for the next 10 years. They've still got to have the quality as well. And it kind of showed when we played them last week. You know, we United, we weren't in the best shape ourselves. But Arsenal just seemed to freeze on the occasion that matters the most. Every single season it happens as well. I guess they have got better as the time's gone on, especially after Arsene Wenger retired. But they just, I don't know, it's literally all I can describe them as is they're just always the bridesmaids, never the bride. They can't take that step. I don't know if it's happened to us and it's happened to Arsenal, that transition of leaving a manager who's been there for 20 odd years and trying to find your identity again. It's like a bit of an identity crisis. Yep. But obviously Arsenal not got enough resources to actually do that, so they have to do it this way, which is kind of sign these raw gems or raw stones maybe.
So we've been fairly critical of Arsenal and been fairly critical of Everton going into this game. Can Everton turn it round tonight? 8 games without a win, coming up against an Arsenal side that do struggle against the better teams. Marley, can you see Everton stopping the rot in this one?
I can't, to be honest. I do think without Calvert-Lewin, there's that thing of where your goal's going to come from. Richarlison will obviously play, but I just think Arsenal they've been all right in the last few weeks. I don't think they did too much wrong against Man United. They just didn't have enough up front to cause more issues, but overall the performance wasn't that bad. So with the run they've been on, minus the games against Man United and Liverpool, who, you know, two of the top three, top four, you know, you're looking at Arsenal's last few games, and before that they were unbeaten since August. So I can see that continuing, and I can see Arsenal getting the points.
Marley going for the Arsenal win. Right, next on Football Social Daily, we're going to get stuck into Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who's got a new book out next year, and a few of the quotes from which are looking pretty tasty already. We'll tell you exactly what he's been saying and who he's been saying them about next on Football Social Daily.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily. Zlatan Ibrahimovic has a new book coming out, an autobiography, Adrenaline, My Untold Stories, which sounds and looks like it's going to be absolute box office. This is already on my list.
I thought
of
you were going to say something else beginning with B-O and ending in...
I mean, probably full of stories that are that, but it just, I mean, there's a man that I think always entertains on the pitch and off it, and it is Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And a lot of the focus of the quotes that have been in the press over the last couple of days that are taken directly from the book, designed to build excitement, have come about his time at Manchester United, and he has labelled them a small club. So the direct quote from the book is, "Everyone thinks of Manchester United as a top club, one of the richest and most powerful in the world. And seen from the outside, it looked that way to me. But once I was there, I found a small, closed mentality." That is what Zlatan Ibrahimovic thought of his two seasons spent at Manchester United. Joel, does this damage the Manchester United brand? Or because it's Zlatan Ibrahimovic, is it just Zlatan being Zlatan?
I don't think Zlatan could have damaged it. The club have done it themselves in the last 10 years. My God. You know what? It's not even a quote that kind of annoys me, because when you look at how badly run the club has been in its last 5, 6, 7 years, it's quite obvious as well. I'm not even surprised he said something like that. But, you know, with Zlatan, he's a bit of a rare breed of a footballer, isn't he, where he's never going to filter what he says. Nothing's cliche. Everything's very original and very real. And it's quite a rarity these days. I don't think you'll get many other footballers. I think it's just his generation who weren't all media trained and puppets for the media. He's just how he says it, how it is. I don't think it damages the brand, because, like I said, United have done enough themselves to damage it in terms of how poorly run, you know, Ed Woodward and the Glazers has run the club in the last years. It's been a bit of a circus, if we're honest. Mm. But, you know, with Zlatan, he's not all full of roses. It is time at United. Sure, he scored, I think, like 27 in his first season, which is pretty good for, I think, like 35 at the time. But he went missing in every big game. I swear to, in his career, he's always gone missing in every big game. So he has that chink in his armour to get, let's put it out there. But I don't know if I've seen a report as well with Ronaldo saying that he was quite surprised with what he found when he first rejoined us. And I'm not even surprised, because imagine going from the days of being under Ferguson, where you've got all these elite winners who are always going for the league constantly, and there's never like a let up. You can't let up. And then you go to a side who don't really have any winners in the side at all. I don't think any of them have won the Premier League, apart from De Gea, maybe. And I'm sure it was a shock to the system. And I'm sure it was a shock to Zlatan. But the only difference I'm kind of questioning was that it was Mourinho there.
Mm.
But Zlatan wasn't the only player who said that while Mourinho was there. Alexis Sanchez also said it. I remember him saying a quote when in the Chilean press, which was that as soon as he signed from Arsenal, he went into a training session and wanted to cancel his contract. And I don't know if it was a club thing or a Jose Mourinho environment kind of thing, because it sounded pretty toxic when he was there in terms of how, you know, like Schweinsteiger was completely exonerated from the side and he was falling out with Pogba. And I would believe what he says. I'm pretty sure it is quite accurate and it doesn't surprise me with what he said. But I'm sure the book's going to reveal a hell of a lot. And you know a book's out when he has to use a quote from Manchester United, so sell it, let him sell it.
The Mourinho story is a fascinating one in itself. Yeah, the time it's taking him to implode at each club seems to be getting shorter and shorter. It's already going wrong at Roma, but that's a completely different podcast, I guess. In terms of his comments here, Marley, this is Zlatan Ibrahimovic talking about, particularly he was talking about the treatment of Wayne Rooney, and it was when Wayne Rooney left the club, went to Everton, and he was kind of erased from Manchester United's history at that point. So he was talking about how the club deals with its former legends. Does that impact players who might think about going to Manchester United? Because it's kind of like an employee leaving a job and then going to a website like Glassdoor and just kind of slagging off the company because you didn't enjoy your time there. It's not kind of a glowing reference, is it, for them as an employer, of the way they treat their players?
Because at first, like, I was thinking about this, like, it's just Zlatan, like, he talks, and he knows how to keep the attention on himself, and, you know, he's no stranger to talking a bit of for some nice PR and to make himself look good or sell a book in this case.
But as Joel said, you know, this has happened with Alexis Sanchez as well. It's happened a little bit with Rooney. So if it keeps happening, I don't think it's ever going to put players off going there. But it's certainly something to think about, because it, you know, if you don't feel respected by your employer in any walk of life, whether you're a postman or a footballer or a pilot, like it's all gets into your head, you know. And the treatment of Man United's former players isn't the best. You know, there has been cases of discontent with like former players and things like that. And it's not a huge problem, but it is something to keep an eye on, because if it keeps happening, it doesn't matter if like one guy who's mostly full of like Zlatan, it doesn't matter if he says it, but if he says it and sort of three or four others, then someone somewhere's got a point. So maybe it's something to keep an eye on and keep thinking about.
How about Ibrahimovic's legacy at the club here, Joel? Did he have much of a legacy in the first place, and has he damaged it in any way? I always thought I enjoyed his time at the Premier League.
No, so
I enjoyed
I.
his time at United.
Yeah, I think a lot of United fans hold him in like a good regard, because everyone questioned whether he could do it at his age in the Premier League. And he, in that first season, he definitely did.
Was he 39, wasn't he, when
I think,
he signed?
Yeah. No. He was. I think it was like 36, 37.
Because
okay. He went to LA after that as well. Yeah. And that first season, he really silenced a lot of critics. I think he got around 27 goals in all comps. And we won the Capital One. Not Cap, why do I keep saying Capital One? The Carabao Cup.
Milk Cup.
Yeah.
Grumbelows.
And the Europa League. That was probably our last successful season, really, in the club. Yeah, let's be honest, like a legacy. I don't know if he has a massive legacy in terms of one of our best ever or one of the greatest players to ever play at our club. It was enjoyable. It was an enjoyable time. But, you know, the players who leave a legacy at the club are the ones who win us the big things. Mm. And he's never been a player who wins you the big things, regardless of what club he's been at. Guardiola got rid of him quickly at Barcelona. He ended up winning the treble. Inter got rid of him and they ended up winning the treble. And yeah, he's won
you,
a lot.
You got rid of him and haven't won anything since.
True. I thought we won an FA. True, but anyway, moving on.
I'll get your point.
No, but yeah, he's like you said, Jimmy, he's a fun player to have. But in my opinion, like I think probably Cavani's probably left a bigger legacy than he has, in my opinion, in terms of the way he dedicated himself to the club. And he didn't score as many goals, but I think his professionalism and the... I think if you asked any United fan, if you could have Ibrahimovic 10 years younger in his prime or Cavani 10 years younger in his prime, it would be unanimous in what answer it would be. And that's telling, I think. But yeah, he was enjoyable, but I don't really think he has an amazing legacy. He had a great first season, then he got injured and he was done. But yeah, he's a character, isn't he? And I think that's the legacy he will leave, the fact that he was a character.
I just want to read one of the other quotes from the book, just because it made me laugh. It's also talking about how he turned up to Manchester United's training ground, and every day he was asked to show his ID and his papers. And he says, "I'd lower my window and say to the person at the gate, 'Listen, my friend, I've been coming here every day for a month. I'm the best player in the world. If you still don't recognise me, you're in the wrong job.'"
I can literally imagine that. I was like, "Listen, my friend."
you can just hear it in his voice, can't you? The book's out next year, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more revelations and quotes to come from it when it does finally get released. That is it for Football Social Daily for today. Thank you very much for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe or follow wherever it is you're listening to this show, because there is a new Football Social Daily chocker. It's crammed full of Premier League news and opinion every single day. Joel, Marley, nice one.
Thank you.
Cheers, lads.
And you can find more from the Sports Social and the Sports Social Podcast Network at sport-social.co.uk.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.